Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is December the 2nd, and we are in Treyasur in Malachi. We are in the last parak, that's chapter 3, and we are up to Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. I'm sorry, hold on, please. We're in verse 11.
I had music on before, it was blasting.
Okay. Okay, so we don't have that much to go till we finish, and it's possible to finish tonight, but there's a lot to talk about from here till the end, so I'm not sure that we're going to complete it tonight. We were just talking about how a person can test Hashem when it comes to the Maisros, giving Maiser, and the Pasuk says that if you do this, if you give Maiser properly, v'ga'arti lachem ba'ochel, I will go'er means to yell at, or means to subdue. And ochel means, doesn't mean food, ochel is food. Ochel is that which eats. So I will yell on your behalf against that which eats, which means the pests, the locusts.
Oh.
That I'll yell at them, and I'll keep them away. V'lo yashchis lachem es pri ha'adama, and they will not destroy for you the produce. V'lo sishakel lachem hagefen basadeh, and the vine in the field will not be mishakel. Mishakel means, in a human being, it means to lose a child. Here it means to lose the fruit. It's not going to lose its fruit. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem. And all the nations, they will praise you, like Ashrei, Yoshvei Veisecha, they'll praise you. Kisiu atem eretz chefetz, you will be a land of desire, Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem. So if you do these things, you will end up being, not only you'll have a lot of bracha, but you will be recognized world over as being special. Chazku alai divrechem, Amar Hashem. Hashem says that your words, now we go back to more musr, more admonishment. Chazku alai divrechem, Amar Hashem. Hashem says, your words were strong against me, says Hashem. You said things that weren't appropriate, that weren't nice. Va'amartem, and you said, Manid barnu alecha, what did we say about you? What did we say bad? This follows the same pattern we've seen in Malachi over and over again, that a statement is made about what we do, and then a statement is made about our question. When we say to Hashem, what do you mean? What did we do? So Hashem says, you spoke strongly, badly. We said, what did we say? Amartem, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, Amartem, you said, Shav avod Elokim. It's worthless to serve Hashem. There's no gain to serve Hashem. Uma betzain, what gain is there? Ki shamarnu mishmarto, that we guarded his guarding. V'chi halachnu kedoranis, and we went with our heads bowed. We went with our heads down. Mipnei Hashem tzvakos, because of Hashem. Here we kept the Torah. We did all this. We worked hard. We had a rough life. And we don't see any reward. In fact, not only do we not see any reward, we see that those who don't serve Hashem are actually doing much better than we are. They're wealthier, they're having a better life, they have more power, they have more freedom, and we have a very, very rough time. And therefore we say, what's the point in serving Hashem? That was the negative. That's the strong words that we've used. And not only that, Ve'atoya now, Anachnu me'ashrim zeidim. We are in fact praising, same word as before, from the word ashrei. We are praising those who sin purposefully. Zeidim, those who are willful sinners. Gam nivnu osei rish'ah. Also those who do evil, they have been built up. Gam bachanu elokim vayimaleitu. They tested God, not in a good way, not the way we said before with Maisa, but rather they tested God that they did bad things, saying, let's see if Hashem will punish us. Vayimaleitu, and they escaped. They weren't punished. So here we see the Rishayim, the evil, are successful, and we see that Tzadikim are not being rewarded, and we say, what's the value in serving Hashem? What's the point? So Hashem responds with a very oft-quoted pasuk. Now this may not be so well known, however, I will show you that this pasuk appears in several places that are well known. Az nidbiru yirei Hashem ish al reyehu. Then they will speak, those who fear Hashem, one man to his friend. They will say, each one to the other, that they will say that we have to serve Hashem properly, that we should not join the actions of the evil. We should remain tzaddikim. They will strengthen each other when they see the evil are successful and the tzaddikim are not being rewarded. Then those who fear Hashem will speak one to the other to strengthen one another and say, no, stay strong, don't give up. We need to not be influenced by the evil people. We need to continue to serve Hashem. Vayakshev Hashem vayishma. Hashem listens and he hears. Vayikasev sefer zikaron lefanav liyirei Hashem. And he writes in a book of remembrances before him for those who fear Hashem, ulecho shvei shemo, and those who mention his name, those who value his name. Then Hashem writes it down that there will be a time when we will be rewarded and the evil people will be punished. V'hayu li amar Hashem tzvakos, and they will be for me, says Hashem, layom ashani oseh segula, for the day that I am making as a treasure, a future treasure. V'chamalti aleihem, and I will have mercy on them, kasher yachmol ish al bino ha'oved oso, like a man has mercy on his son who serves him. There will come a time when their righteousness will be brought out. All of their self-sacrifice has been written down. It will be produced, and the evil people will be punished. The tzaddikim will be rewarded. Vishavtem uri isem, you will return and you will see bein tzaddik la rasha, the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, bein oved elokim, between those who serve Hashem, la shalo avado, and those who did not serve Hashem. So there will come a time, it's in the future, when all will come clear, and all of the self-sacrifice, and all of the troubles and tribulations that those who serve Hashem and those who fear Hashem have gone through, that will end up putting them on top, they will be rewarded, they will be praised, and the Rishayim will be punished. That will be coming in the future. And our job is to not give up, even though it takes a while, and even though it's in the future and hasn't happened right away, but that Hashem is recording everything, and to be very, very clear that is the case, then that all will eventually be made right. Now this pasuk is of pasuk Tezayin of Oz Nidbiru Yirei Hashem. Then those who fear Hashem will speak. This is a pasuk that is quoted in Pirkei Avos, and it is quoted actually twice in Pirkei Avos. And the pasuk tells us in Perek Gimel, chapter 3, in Mishnah Gimel, in the third Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Omer, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion says, Shnayim shiyoshvin ve'ein ve'neim b'divrei Torah. Two people are sitting and there's no Torah between them. Harei zemoshav leitzim, then that is like a gathering of scorners. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, in Tehillim uv'moshav leitzim lo yashav, he did not sit amongst the scorners. Aval shnayim shiyoshvin ve'yesh ve'neim b'divrei Torah, but two who are sitting and have Torah between them, Shechina shruya b'neim, the Shechina Hashem's divine presence rests among them. Shneamar, as the pasuk says, Oz nidbru yirei Hashem ishal reyehu, our pasuk. That then those who fear Hashem will speak one to the other. What will they speak one to the other? They will speak Torah one to the other. Vayakshev Hashem vayishma, and Hashem will hear and he will listen. Vayikasev sefer zikaron lefanav, and he will write them in a book of remembrances before him. Liyarei Hashem, for those who fear Hashem. L'choshvei Shemo, and those who consider his name, who think his name, praise his name, and the Mishnah goes on from there. And there's another Mishnah as well that says that if there are 10 people learning Torah, 5 people learning Torah, 3 people, even two people who are learning Torah together, then this is what happens. So this pasuk is referring not only to, as we said in the simple reading, that those who fear Hashem will encourage each other to continue to fear Hashem and not be influenced by the evil people. But in addition, it is referring to those who learn Torah together, that Hashem listens and that he writes it in the book of remembrances. Now, when it says Hashem listens, so, I mean, Hashem can hear everything. And of course, everything in our lives gets recorded. But the pasuk is telling us there's a special listening that Hashem does for two people learning Torah together, and that it gets especially written down. There's a special book that is where that is recorded for posterity, and it will all be made right because of it. The Gemara says, what does it mean, ulechoshevei shemo? It could mean the word choshev could mean to think. It could also come from the word choshuv, as in important. Though those who consider Hashem's name important praise Hashem's name. But the simple meaning is those who think his name. The Gemara tells us that a machshava tova, if a person has a good thought, person says, I would like to do a mitzvah. And they think that in their minds. And then they go and do the mitzvah. The reward is given to them not only for the doing of the mitzvah, but for thinking of the mitzvah as well. Not only that, says the Gemara, but even if someone thought to do a mitzvah and then they were prevented from doing so through no fault of their own, then they are given reward as if they have done the mitzvah. And that is derived from here, l'choshevei shemo, those who think about doing something for his name, those who think about being megale kavod shamayim, bringing out the honor of heaven by doing mitzvos, then even if they are prevented from doing so, reward is granted for the thought as if they did it. The Gemara says this is not so with non-Jews, only with Jews. And the Gemara says, this is not so with an Aveira. With an Aveira, the Gemara tells us that even though when a person does think about doing an Aveira and then actually, God forbid, does it, then the punishment will also go back to the thought, because the thought bore fruit. He actually did what he was thinking. Therefore, the thought is included in the Aveira. But if a person was thinking of doing the Aveira but was prevented from doing so, even though they wanted to do it, they do not get punished. The thought is not considered as if they did it. As opposed to a mitzvah, where if they are prevented from doing so, it is considered as if they did it. The Gemara says this is a chesed of Hashem, that He grants reward as if one did it for a mitzvah, but not for an aveira. But there is a sobering postscript to that rule. That rule a lot of people know. But the postscript, which is sobering, most people don't know, which is the Gemara says the aveira, the thought for the aveira that never comes to fruition, when the aveira never actually takes place, the thought does not count against the person. That is only true for Averos the person does not do habitually. But Averos the person does habitually, then even when they think about doing the Avera and are prevented from doing so, they are punished for the thought, just like with a mitzvah. If a person does a particular Avera, God forbid, over and over and over again, it becomes their lifestyle. It's the way they live. It's the way they think. Then they are taken to task for the thought of the Avera, even if they don't end up doing the Avera. Now, I'm not talking about they don't end up doing it because they have a change of heart. That's different. If a person stops themselves, then of course they are not punished for the thought because they did tshuva. They didn't do it. But if a person is prevented from doing the Avera, they really wanted to and they just couldn't, then if they do this Avera habitually, then the thought will count against them. We see from here that the reason why should it be that thought should count as if one did the action? Let's say with a mitzvah. So a person says, I would like to go and help somebody. There's someone who needs help and I would like to go help them. And they get in their car to drive to go help the person, and on the way, they get a flat tire. And by the time the tire gets fixed, the opportunity is gone. So Hashem says, you wanted to do it, you tried to do it, you were prevented from doing it, you get reward as if you did it. In Olam Haba, you're going to have in your ledger that you did this mitzvah. Not that you attempted to do the mitzvah, it's actually going to say you did the mitzvah. Because you thought about it and you tried. And then you were prevented. It's going to be like you did it. So why should that be? The fact of the matter is you didn't do it. So you say, but it's not fair, I wanted to. Okay, life isn't fair. I mean, that's the way it goes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So why should it be as if I did it? And if we're going to say that it is as if I did it, why should it be different with an Avera? If we're going to say that thought is given weight as if it was done, then why should there be a differentiation between a mitzvah and Avera? That's Hashem's chesed. But what's the logic behind it? There's got to be some logic behind that, that a person decided they were going to do a particular Avera, and they jumped in their car to go drive to do the Avera, and they got a flat tire. And by the time it was all fixed, the opportunity to do the Avera was gone. They weren't able to do the Avera. Says Hashem, I'm not going to punish that person as if they did it. They're not going to get punished as if they did the Avera. What's the difference? If for the mitzvah, they're going to get rewarded, why not for the Avera? So we see that the reason for this is because Hashem gives thought the weight as if it was done when that is the way that you live. When that's who you are. When that thought defines you and you are defined by that thought, then the thought is as if you did it. Because the thought and the action are not much different because it's about me. When I think about this mitzvah and I want to go do the mitzvah, it defines me. Every Jew, the default is they want to do mitzvahs. That's the default. So therefore, if a person says, I want to do it, it's as if they did it. But in Avera, even though unfortunately we do Averos, at times, and unfortunately it happens, but when we do it, it's not where we want to be. We do it, our Yetzirah gets the better of us, we stumble, but it doesn't define us. It's not who we are. It is a lapse. It's a mistake. It's something which we should have stayed away from there. We didn't, whatever it is, the Yetzirah grabbed us, we did something wrong. But it's not who we are. And therefore Hashem says, if you don't actually do it, if you just think about doing it, but then it doesn't work out, I'm not going to hold you accountable as if you did it because it's not you. It's not who you are. But unfortunately, if a person becomes habituated to a particular Avera, then it is who they are. Then that's what they do. Now, it doesn't mean every Avera, that's who they are, but this particular Avera is who they are. If a person speaks Lashon Hara regularly, then they are what we call in the Gemara, a Baal Lashon Hara. Someone who speaks Lashon Hara. So you can't tell me it doesn't define them. Unfortunately, it does define them. And until they pull out of that, then even the thought is held against them. But as a default, Jews are defined by their mitzvos and they're not defined by their averos. That's the default. And therefore, the thought process for a mitzvah counts in our favor. The thought process for an avera does not count against us. Again, unless a person became habituated in that in that behavior. The pasuk in pasuk Yitzayin verse 17 mentions a day that I am going to make as a segula. Segula means a treasure, something that Hashem is kiviyachol, so to speak, waiting for, looking forward to. We don't know what the future is going to look like. We've said this many, many times. We're actually going to talk about this much more in depth when we get to the very end of Malachi, either tonight or next week. But we don't know the sequence of events of how things are going to happen with the coming of Mashiach. We know there are things that are going to happen. We know that Mashiach is going to come. We know there is going to be Techiyas Hames in the resurrection of the dead. We know there's something called Milchemes Gog Umagog, the war of Gog Umagog. We know that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. We know there will be a king, that is Mashiach, the Melech HaMashiach. The monarchy will be reestablished. We know the world will come to know Hashem. We know these things. We do not know the sequence of events. We don't know the length of time of each thing. We certainly don't know when each thing will happen. And we do not know the circumstances that will trigger each event. These things we don't know. We're in the dark. We don't know how things are going to occur. And it is not unlikely that there are various possibilities, depending on our behavior, that these things will happen at different times, at different lengths of time, in different sequences, at different triggers. All of that may depend on how we behave. Be that as it may, even though we don't know a lot, but we do know that there are some things that are for sure going to happen. One of those things that is for sure going to happen is there is going to be a day of reckoning. This day, we don't know when it is. We don't know how it's going to take place. We don't even know the length of its time. How long is that day? Is it what we call a day? Is it 1,000 years? Like, what does the day mean? We don't know. But there will be a day of reckoning. We do know that. Then in addition to the reckoning that each one of us has to give when we leave this world after 120 years. Each one of us has our own independent and individual day of reckoning. There is also a day of reckoning for creation, for everybody and everything that will happen at a certain point. And again, we don't know when, how long, what comes before it, what comes after it, what is its purpose. We don't know exactly any of these details, but we do know that it will happen. That is what is being referred to over here when it says that there is a day that ayom ashrani oses segula. And we're going to have more references to it between here and the end of Malachi, to this ultimate day in the future. And we'll discuss what we know about it, which we don't know much, but at least we'll discuss what we know about it when we have a little bit more information to go on later on in Malachi. The pasuk says in Yud Chesed 18, you'll return and you will see between a tzaddik and a rasha, between one who serves Elohim and one who does not serve Hashem. The Gemara says a startling statement, which you may have heard before, but you may not have heard that it is attached to this pasuk. The Gemara says, what does it mean, one who serves Elohim and one who does not? What does that mean? Simple meaning would be, one who serves Elohim is a tzaddik, one who does not serve Elohim is a rasha. But the Gemara says that can't be, because the pasuk already said, Bein tzaddik la rasha, the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha. So what is this second statement between one who serves Hashem and one who does not? And the Gemara says, Eino dome mishashana pirko mea ve'echad pa'amim. You cannot compare someone who studied his piece, his learning, 101 times, to someone who only did it 100 times. The difference between 101 versus 100. The person who did it 101 times is clearly different, clearly better than the one who only did it 100 times. Not that it's not like a small thing. Oh, he just did it one more time after doing it 100 times. What's the big deal? 101 versus 100. No, there's a major difference between 101 and 100. Obviously, the Gemara and the Pasuk is talking about someone where two people were both capable of doing it 101 times. We don't mean someone who's incapable for whatever reason. If a person's incapable, either because of ability or because of circumstance, they're unable to. Clearly, they're not going to be held accountable for that. But two people, when they're both capable of 101 times, and one does it 101 times, and one does it only 100 times, the difference is huge between them. The Gemara says, I'll prove to you that this is possible. Where do you find this idea that should be a little, that this should be like this? So the Gemara says, now the Gemara is using an example that was relevant then, but we have examples like that as well for ourselves. The Gemara says, if you rent the use of an animal to travel a certain, I forget the exact numbers the Gemara uses, but let's say to go 10 parsos, that's how far you want to go with the animal. Then it costs a certain amount of money. But if you want to go 11, you have to pay for the whole another 10 parsos. It's sold in 10 parsa increments. So when you go over the 10 limit, you're already in the next tier. And you have to pay double, not just 1/10 more, not just 10% more. You actually have to pay double. When we have that, many different things where that happens, once you cross into the next tier, you don't just pay proportionally more than you're paying until now, but you pay then that whole next tier. That's the way it works. If you're billed by the hour, so when you get into the next hour, even though you only use 10 minutes of it, you gotta pay for the whole next hour, because it's billed by the hour. That's the concept over here. And the Gemara is saying a person who moves beyond 100, you figure 100, there's a nice round number, 100 times, but the Gemara says no, 101. They push themselves to get into the next tier. They're not just stopping because, okay, I completed 100. Phew, okay, I'm done. No, they're still going. Even though they're only just starting the next tier, they have no hope of getting to 200. It doesn't matter. Person wants to do it more. And they get a noticeably bigger reward for the extra. This does not only apply to studying Torah, it applies to other things as well. Studying Torah is it's easy to give it a number. You can easily express it. But it's true for any sort of mitzvah like that, where a person who pushes themselves into the next tier, even if they don't hope to complete it, that shows a certain love for what they're doing and a certain love for Hashem. Where the person says, this is not about me reaching a round number, this is about bringing out the honor of God. And therefore, if I can push it even more, I'll push it even more. That's what it's about. There is a very interesting remez, a hint to this interpretation in the Pasuk itself, which in the Gemara, where it says this in Maseches Chagiga, in the margin of the Gemara, they mention this remez, this hint. We don't always have these sorts of hints, but this is very interesting. If you look at the words of the Pasuk, so the second part of the Pasuk says, Bein Oved Elokim, between one who serves Hashem, La Asher Lo Avado, and one who did not serve Hashem. So if you look at the first letters of each word, the Rashi Tevos, the first letters of each of the words, so starting with the word Oved, as in Oved Elokim, so Oved starts with an Ayin, Elokim starts with an Aleph, La Asher starts with a Lamed. So Ayin is 70, Aleph is 1, Lamed is 30. 70 plus 1 plus 30 is 101. And the last two words in the Pasuk, Lo Avado, one who did not serve Hashem, Lo starts with a Lamed, Avado starts with an Ayin. Lamed is 30, Ayin is 70, which equals 100. So the first person who is considered serving Hashem, there it's Oved Elokim La Asher, Ayin Aleph Lamed, that's 101. Lo Avado, the one who didn't serve him, is Lamed and Ayin, which is 100. So you see a remez, you see a hint to this concept of 101 versus 100 embedded in the words of the Pasuk. It's a nice a nice thing to see once in a while, so to see something like that. Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19. Ki hinei hayom ba, because behold, the day is coming. Bo'er katanur, burning like an oven. And all of the willful sinners and all those who perform evil will be like straw. Vilihat osam hayom haba, and the day that is coming will burn them up. They will be burned up in that heat. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem, Asher lo yazov lahem shoresh ve'anaf, that it will not remain for them shoresh, which means roots, ve'anaf, and branches. And liken them to a tree, they will be completely burned up, including the roots and the branches. The Gemara tells us, we've mentioned this before, but this is the primary source for it, that in the future, the Gemara tells us that the way that Hashem is going to, in this ultimate day that we're talking about, the way Hashem is going to punish the sinners will be with the sun. With the light. That Hashem is going to bring out the light. What's that? Yeah, the Or HaGanuz, that's right, the hidden light. And it will be, the light will be 7 times 7 the light of the sun. In other words, the light of the sun, the light of the Right. The light of the future is going to be 7 cubed, 7 times 7 times 7, times the light that we have today, times the sun. So that's 343, right? 343, I think. I think that's what it is. 343 is, I believe, the amount. Yeah. 343. That's the amount of times that the future light will be. And that light, it'll be hot, and that will burn up the evil people. They'll be burned up without having any remnant left at all. Not a shoresh, not a root, va'anaf, and not a branch. Pasuk Chaf, verse 20, V'zarcha lachem yirei shemi, shemesh tzedakah umarpei bichnafeha. And it will shine for you, those who fear my name, the sun of righteousness that heals bichnafeha with its wings. Vitzasem ufishtem, and you will go out and you will grow in a positive way, ke'egle marbeik, like the calves that are in the corral, that they graze and they grow. It will, the same sun, the same light, the same, I don't know if it's a sun, but the same light that is going to destroy the Rishayim will actually be pleasurable and give growth to the Tzaddikim. It's not going to be two different places and two different methods. The same item, the same method that is going to punish the Rishayim is going to reward the Tzaddikim. That's the way it's going to work on this awesome day of the future. This Hayom Haba, this day that is approaching, that's what's going to happen. This brings out an important point, which the truth is we touched on this in the other class, in the Sunday night class, and that is the following, there are things in this world that are pleasurable, things that are painful. There are things that are enjoyable, things that are sad, things we look forward to, things we don't look forward to. That's always the case. We can categorize the things that are good, positive, look forward to, pleasurable as certain items, and things that are sad and painful, etc., in another list. And the two lists will have different things on the list. But you can have often the same item in both lists. It just depends on how the person experiences that. So, for example, right about now, when I think about a nice crackling fire that's sitting in front of the fire with the heat, radiating on me, it sounds very pleasurable. That sounds really nice, and it's the kind of thing. Oh, that sounds really good. But in 90 degree weather in the summertime, you think about that, and that sounds pretty awful. Right? It depends how we experience it. Sometimes the same exact item can experience it and it's pleasurable, and you can experience it and it's not pleasurable. It just depends on how you experience it. Sometimes you have things which don't depend on how you experience it, but depend on who you are. That there are certain things which would be pleasurable for one person, but would be, not pleasurable to another person, and maybe even painful. I'll give you an example. Let's say you are a person who really enjoys, you really get an enjoyment out of the sciences and the intricacies of science. And there's someone giving a lecture on molecular biology. And you say, that's really interesting. And you go and you listen to it, and it's really enjoyable to sit there and, you know, to hear the intricacies of how it's being described, and some things you hadn't heard before, and things you had heard before, and things that click in your mind, and it's really enjoyable. And there's someone else who really has no interest in it whatsoever, and has no previous background with it at all, and they're bored out of their minds. And they're sitting, they have to sit through this lecture, and they're counting the time to end. They can't wait till it's over. And it's almost painful to sit there through this lecture. It goes on and on. And when is it going to be over? Right? It's the exact same lecture. But for one person, it's a pleasure. For the other person, it's a bore and maybe even painful.
What's that? Was it torture?
Torture, right. Right. So it can depend on the person. When in this awesome day that we're talking about, what is going to be brought out is this awesome light. So what is this light? Which includes heat, but what is this light? So we don't know exactly what it is. This Or HaGanuz, this hidden light. They talk about it with Hanukkah. The Hanukkah is a forerunner, a forebearer of this awesome light of the future. But what is it exactly? So we don't know, of course, but one thing is certain. It has to do with Hashem's presence being felt by human beings. Right now, the way that the world is set up, and even more, the way that the world has behaved, Hashem's presence is very difficult to experience. Hashem is behester upon him, he's hidden, and it's very difficult to really feel Hashem's presence. Sometimes a person can feel it somewhat, but it's very ephemeral the way it is right now. In a time of Geula, time of redemption, like during the first Beis HaMikdash, less so during the second Beis HaMikdash, but certainly during the first Beis HaMikdash, then Hashem's presence was more directly felt, much more so. This Yom Haba, this future time that we're talking about, and again, exactly what that is, we don't know when and how, whatever it is, but that future time, Hashem's presence will be felt more so than ever before in this world. I don't know about Matan Torah. Could be when the Torah was given that will rival what will be in the future. That I don't know. I can't say. I don't know. I know that until now, Hashem's greatest revelation ever in this world was the giving of the Torah. So I don't know how to compare that to the future. But certainly anything else will pale in comparison to the experience of Hashem's presence on that awesome day to come. Hashem's presence is a beautiful and wonderful thing, and it's something that we desire. And connecting to Hashem is the greatest pleasure that there is. There is no greater pleasure than connecting to Hashem Himself. And the whole purpose of creation is to give us the opportunity to connect to Him. That's the purpose. And that is the ultimate reward, the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate good, the ultimate shlemus, completion, is connecting to our Creator. There's nothing greater than that. There's nothing that even compares to that. That is the most sublime, beautiful thing that there is. It's hard for us to relate to it because we're physical beings and we're living in a world like this, but that is the ultimate pleasure. When that happens, it's incredible. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a reward. It's being close to Hashem. But a person has to be able to appreciate it. A person has to be able to enjoy it. And the way that a person is able to enjoy that experience is directly related to how much of a Yarei Shamayim they are. How much do they fear God? How many mitzvahs have they done? How much have they connected in our very, 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 very limited way right now in this world? The amount of mitzvahs that we've done, the way we have built ourselves up and have made ourselves better people, we become a clay kibul. We become a utensil that is able to receive this awesome presence of Hashem. But a person who has done less to prepare, and worse, a person who has actually distanced themselves from Hashem and done Averos, then that experience, not only can they not enjoy it, it actually destroys them. This revelation of Hashem is a wonderful, beautiful, enjoyable, pleasurable experience for those who have prepared for it. And it is destructive to those who have not. You talk about, if you want to use food as an example, obviously, lahavdil, but we can use food as an example, and you have a type of food that requires acquiring a taste for that food. There are different foods like that. A person can acquire a taste for it. Fine wine, most people have to acquire a taste for it. But other foods as well, a person has to acquire a taste. Once they acquire the taste, it's delicious. It's what they want. It's something which they really enjoy. Someone who has not acquired the taste, they gag on the food or the drink. They have it like, what is this? Right? Because they haven't acquired the taste. Torah and mitzvos is how we, so to speak, acquire the taste for that awesome revelation of the future. And therefore, it doesn't have to be two different things, one that rewards and one that punishes. The exact same thing, this awesome revelation, is going to both reward and punish simultaneously. Because those who have prepared will get the most incredible reward possible, and those who have not prepared and those who have actually gone in the other direction will unfortunately experience terrible pain and loss with that revelation. That's what's being brought out over here. We actually have more to say about this. I know there's not that many psukim left in Malachi, but we have more to talk about on this topic in the last few psukim. But before we end for tonight, I want to come on. You have a question?
What about the non-Jews?
Okay, good question. Question is, what about the non-Jews? So the non-Jews have the same experience on their level. In other words, a non-Jew is incapable of reaching the heights of a Jew because they only have 7 mitzvos. We have 613. The more mitzvos you have, the more that you can reach. So they're incapable of reaching the same levels as we can, but they can reach the levels that they are built to reach.
As so they'll have the same experience
on their level. On their level. That's right. And also the evil non-Jews will have the same experience on their level. The same, right? Okay. That's right.
Can I just want to, so I remember when we talked about, I think, Kriyas Yamsuf, you presented that being that Hashem did an action, and the action that the reason why there was a big pellet for everybody is because the same action benefited the Klal Yisrael and hurt the Mitzrim.
That's right.
And so it's the same here, but that was like you presented that as like being the first time that seeing Hashem in that way. And so that was, right? It's the same idea?
Yeah, same idea. Over there it was an event that happened in this world, and this is really something that's describing the ultimate schar. The ultimate schar v'onesh. Whatever that day is that we're talking about. But yes, conceptually it's the same idea. That's right.
So this light is not talking about when Mashiach comes in Olam Hazeh?
So we don't know exactly what it's talking about. This is what we're going to, next time Yirtzeh Hashem, we'll discuss this a little bit more in depth about what this day might be, but it does not seem that it is something that is this worldly. It seems like it is next worldly, whatever that means. But as I mentioned at the outset, we don't really know, but we'll cover that more next time. The very end of Malachi, there is a very, very important Rambam, which we'll discuss, that will help at least, it's not gonna settle the question, but at least it'll give us our choices. That's the best we can do.
Okay. Rabbi, it seems like the whole structure of earth, nature, man will be, have to have a resolution how they'll be able to take the strong sunlight, unless it's a spiritual light, we'll see through our spirit instead of our physicality of eyes.
So that's a strong possibility that we're talking about more of a spiritual thing. It does seem that there's a physical element to it as well, because the Gemara is comparing it and saying how many times the light we're talking about is. So it does seem like there's a physical side to it, but I agree with you. You would think that our physical bodies as we are right now certainly could not handle that kind of brightness. We wouldn't be able to handle that. And it could be that is precisely the point, that those who are distant from Hashem and have emphasized their physical selves, so they will not have the ability to deal with this light. It'll destroy them because they can only deal with it physically, and a physical body can't handle it. Whereas those who have emphasized their spiritual selves, the spirit can handle it and in fact will enjoy it. So it could be that you are right, that is where it comes from. It's we don't know for sure, but that makes a lot of sense. Yes.
So would the sun and the moon then be the same size?
That's what the Medrash says, that we don't know exactly when that's happening. See, again, that and this may be two different events at two different times. We don't know. We do know that's another event that's supposed to take place, but exactly how and when and why and that we just don't know. But you might be right. That might be part of this.
Thank you.
One last point, and we'll end with this. It says in Pasuk Yotessa 19 that the evil people will be destroyed and it will not remain for them shoresh va'anaf. The last two words are they won't have roots or branches. The Gemara discusses the question, what happens to the children of the evil people? The children of the evil people, do they get destroyed as well? Because the Pasuk says that the evil people will be so utterly destroyed that will not remain for them even any kind of remnant. Well, their children are their remnant. So does this mean that the children will be destroyed as well? And the Gemara's conclusion is that no, that the children will not be destroyed. And rather, when it says shoresh va'anaf, that either it refers to the entirety of their bodies will be completely destroyed, or it refers to even their positive actions, that Hashem will have already rewarded them in this world, so there'll be nothing left for them afterwards. which we know is the way, we know that that's the way Hashem operates, that Hashem wants to increase the reward of the tzaddikim by giving them whatever punishments they need to have in this world, and decrease the reward of the Rishaim in giving them whatever reward they have to get, giving it to them in this world. So then that's what it means. There'll be no remnant, mean no remnant of they themselves, either their bodies or their actions, there'll be no remnant, but their children will be able to go on, provided that their children behave differently than the parents. Okay, so we will stop here, and even though there's only a few more psukim, that's what we will cover, Mirtz Hashem, next time when we plan to finish Malachi, and in so doing finish Trei Asar. That will be right before Hanukkah, Mirtz Hashem. That's the night before Hanukkah next week. And my plan is to begin Sefer Yirmiyahu after Trei Asar, so that in 2 weeks' time, we'll discuss what to do over Hanukkah, but we'll... Next week, Wednesday night next week is the night before Hanukkah.
Oh my gosh, it's my father's yard
site,
I don't have to.
Oh, is it? Oh wow, okay. So then we're gonna start Yirmiyahu after that. Normally we like to make some sort of a siyum when we finish a sefer. It's pretty hard to do that right now, but, we'll celebrate as best we can.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.